You know, Vince, I'm the Heartbreak Dog, the WWF Intercontinental Champion. I am a man of my word. I am the champion of my word. I'll defend my Intercontinental Championship against anyone, anywhere, anytime, Vince. Wait, Vince, who's this hoodlum walking around the ring? Wait, Vince, why isn't your security guard just getting this guy?
Did I hear you say anytime, anywhere, against anyone?
Wait,
Heartbreak Dog!
Beverly!
Yeah, that's right. It's me, Beverly Hills.
Where do you come from?
I challenge you to a podcast showdown right here tonight on Main Event Status Radio.
But Vince, where did he come from?
From the intersection of Sunset Boulevard and Bass Street, Minnesota. You downloaded Main Event Status Radio with your host, Mr. Beverly Hills, 90210, and the Dirty Dog Dirty.
Podcasting from the intersection of Sunset Boulevard and Bad Street, Minnesota, you're listening to Main Event Status Radio. I am. Well, I am the Dirty Dog Darcy. I don't know who's tooted. Tooter, who are you?
The Mr. Beverly Hills, 9021.
Why are you so tooty fruity, Beverly?
I don't know, man. It's just fun. Oh, gosh. We have an early run-in from Mrs. Beverly Hills asking about why I'm making so many farting noises out here.
Did you just wake up Mrs. Beverly Hills from her nap?
I did. I woke her up with all of my fart noises.
Be kind. Please rewind your fart.
All right. Okay. I'll cut the fart noises to make everybody happy.
Please have some heart. Don't fart.
All right. And on that note, let's get rolling here.
Okay. Obviously, welcome, guys, for listening and downloading the podcast. This is obviously Main Event Status Radio. And this week, we're talking about WWF Monday Night Raw from May 17th, 1993, episode 17 of Raw, I suppose.
Yep.
And, yeah, I picked this episode partly because of the main event match that is on deck for the night. Marty Jannetty challenging Shawn Michaels for the Intercontinental Championship. But before that, the show opened with the classic WWF Raw intro. Woo, woo, woo. Oh, so yeah, we are finally back to the Manhattan Center in New York City, which I can pronounce. And Vince McMahon welcomes us to Monday Night Raw. And who is with him at the color booth tonight?
He's got Macho, and he's got Bobby in a, what's he wearing? He's wearing orange this week. He's still in his Raw jumpsuit.
So I did notice that Macho Man's attire was the Raw colors.
Yeah, this was actually, I could actually deal with this one. It at least kind of had like a pattern to it. It wasn't just flowers and stuff.
Or polka dots.
Yeah, or polka dots.
Then, yeah, they talked about the Special Olympics, Razor Ramon, Tatanka, Kamala versus Yokozuna, and Shawn Michaels is there for a special interview.
Yeah, I like the opening. I really liked the Special Olympics thing. I think the Special Olympics are an awesome just thing in general, and it's cool that Macho and the Smoking Guns were at it. So
before we go more into the show, I do want to talk to you about something we haven't talked about yet, which I think appeared at almost all the Raw episodes that we reviewed so far.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about the Raw card gals.
Oh, all right. Okay.
What's your thoughts about them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're nothing that's like integral to the episode, but it's all right. I will refer. See, I was going to refer to the Card Gals a little later on in the evening.
I know. So. I think you and I may have wrote down the same note.
We shall see. We shall see.
But I want to say that they were absolutely beautiful.
Well, I'm glad you thought so.
I wish
they're extremely 1993 in their dress. That's for sure.
I wish the VidMac would bring them back, Jack.
Oh my! Maybe the same ones. How about that?
Especially the one who Razor tried to hit on later.
Oh, okay, the bigger girl, huh?
Bertha Faye, always be mine.
Oh my God.
You're the rainbow I pray I find.
Okay, I'm going to cut you off.
Okay, Lord Alfred Hayes is backstage. But before we go there, we see a video package with Shawn Michaels from... I've been on Shawn Michaels' ROM the week prior. Shawn Michaels from the week prior where Mr. Perfect attacked him outside the building and smashed into Howard Finkel's rental vehicle.
Oh, that was Howard Finkel's rental vehicle?
Yeah, I guess we found out about that. like a couple decades later, that was Howard Finkel's rental vehicle.
Oh, that was cool. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, Howard Finkel didn't know about that until after it was taped.
Oh, funny. We'll be about the insurance.
Yeah, I know. Then we go back to Lord Alfred Hayes, and he told us that he saw somebody in disguise sneaking into Raw, and we'll be surprised on who it will be.
Love it.
Dun-dun-dun! Then we go to the first opening match.
Okay, we got the Smoking Guns back again. Making another appearance on Main Event Status. Facing off against Glenn Ruth and Tony Vajda.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I don't know.
You know... As much as you and I don't like the Smoking Guns, I swear they are the Main Event Status stars of Main Event Status Radio.
They're on, like, every time. I think they've been on almost all the episodes we've done.
Why are we such suckers for punishment, Beverly?
I don't know. Why don't we just look at the match listings before we pick them?
Yeah, we probably should have.
That would probably be a better idea.
Because the first note I have for this match is, I hate the gimmick of the guns shooting off their guns and all.
Why is that?
It's just silly. Okay. Howard Finkel thought he was being shot at.
I know he doesn't even announce Glenn Ruth and Tony Vajda.
Or whatever his name is, yeah.
Because he's running out of the ring.
Yeah.
So you know who Glenn Ruth is, right?
No.
Thrasher from the Headbangers. Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Guess he didn't mosh his way through these things yet, huh?
No, Mosh. I don't even think Mosh is wrestling yet, or he's there. Well, obviously they're not together yet. But yeah, Glenn Ruth was a few years off, and you know, he wrestled a long time, maybe from the late '80s, and was doing this like jobber stuff, and then eventually made his way to the. You know, a gimmick that got him a tag team championship and everything. So,
and we'll also notice that with another jobber from tonight later on. So,
yes, exactly.
Okay, why I wrote down the first move was from Bart Gunn to Tony was a schoolboy.
Yeah, okay.
I wish the match would have ended right there.
Well, I think Tony did too, because right after that, he got out of the rig and he didn't get back in.
If I was Tony, I would have just walked off and got counted out.
Did you notice that both the jobbers were in the famous jobber striped singlets?
Yes, it made me smile. So I did write down that one of Bobby's lines.
Okay, what do you got?
He questioned, is there a rodeo going on next door? Or is that the Smoking Guns I smell in here?
Okay.
Yes, it made me laugh out loud, too.
What was your thoughts? Rodeo or Smoking Guns stink?
I question if the Smoking Guns are related to Bastion Booger.
Oh, my.
Since last episode that we covered, how Macho was saying that he's happy this isn't Smell-O-Vision.
You got it. So, I wrote down a few different moves. I wrote that Billy did a nice flying clothesline to Glenn. And then after that, both the guns got in and did a really sloppy double Russian leg sweep to Glenn. Did you see that one?
Wouldn't it be a double American leg sweep?
I suppose, huh? Yeah, they both had trouble like getting his arms around their head, and then they fell at different rates. It was pretty bad. That was one of the worst ones from those two.
Was it me, or did the crowd seem like they weren't interested in this match?
Yeah, I don't know. Was this the one where, like, kind of in the middle, they just started, like, cheering for something else, it seemed?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I got a macho line here and go, yeah, the only exercise you get is from jumping to conclusions.
Macho's a great philosopher. What can I say?
He really is. He really is. Billy was really working the elbows in this match, a lot of elbow and knee drops, and he was going to work. He was trying to earn his paycheck tonight, at least.
Billy, what's his name?
No, Billy Gunn.
Oh, okay. No. Yeah, the finish came when the smoking guns hit a cool but scary-looking pile driver. That could have ended so wrong.
I agree, because, so what happens is Billy does a back body drop, and then Bart catches him and pile drives him. You know, he almost didn't catch him, and if he, you know, he needs to really, like, kind of stop his momentum, and I don't know. They didn't use this move for an extremely long time, for a super long time, and you can totally tell why.
Yeah, because, when that happened, I was afraid that, I can't write down which job or the pile drove, but that looked pretty scary. I was afraid that they might have broke his neck.
It was all Glenn. Remember, Tony got out of there after the school boy never came back in.
I guess they were trying to bane his head.
Yes, you got it, brother. All right, what's your rating on this one?
1/100th of a star.
Oh, my.
I want to rate this a dud, but I want to rate it close to it.
1/100th of a star.
Because I found this match to be boring.
I will give it 3/4 of a star.
I am happy that we're back to the normal main event status ratings.
I don't think we'll ever really deviate from it much.
Well, we did last week.
I know, I'm just saying from this point on.
Then we go to a commercial for WWF Mania, which Todd Pettengill put over.
Yep. But the only thing I noted from this is at the end of it, Bobby goes, I don't like Todd Pettengill.
Oh, Bobby. Well, talk about Bobby. I know you don't listen to many podcasts, but by chance, did you hear that Tony Schiavone was on the Ross Report this past week with Jim Ross?
I did hear that. I did not listen to it, but I heard that he was on.
Okay, because I did listen to it last night at work, and Tony Schiavone talked a little bit about Bobby Heenan.
What did he say?
And Tony said that he is kicking himself he's kicking himself for... Crap, I just try to think of how he worded it. He feels bad for the way Bobby feels about him. Or, in interviews, how Bobby stated that he hated Tony Schiavone.
Okay.
And Tony is kicking himself for putting out vibes and such to make Bobby hate him.
And Tony, so he's kind of owning that, like, saying he did the things that made Bobby not like him?
Yeah, and he said that, originally when Bobby came into WCW and those two were at the announcer's booth, that they got along just fine and all that. Then, like, right on the time Bobby got sick, they ran into each other, and Bobby said, yeah, here's my number, give me a call sometime. And Tony said, yeah, I'll call you, and never did.
Oh, okay.
So Tony's like, yeah, he's taking full blame for the things that he did to piss Bobby off.
Oh, interesting.
And all that. And it was just an interesting listen and cool to hear Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone chat it up and all that.
For sure. The two voices of the Attitude Era, basically.
Yeah. So it was very, very cool to hear Tony Schiavone on the Ross Report for like an hour and a half.
Cool.
then we might as well go back to the show, and we come back to Bobby and Macho talking for a bit, and they send us to Mr. McMahon in the ring,
who welcomes do the thing, Vince McMahon in the ring. How do you like that?
And we're here to welcome the WWF Intercontinental Champion, Shawn Michaels.
Before Shawn comes out, I just love this guy. That's kind of like in the middle, right behind the ring. He's got this sweet shirt. It's yellow and it says Bob Backlund, World Champion, on it.
I wonder if he got that shirt from like during the early 80s.
Must have, or it was, you know, referring to that because he hadn't yet won it again.
Or he's preluding that Bob Backlund will win the WWF Championship.
That would be impressive.
He must be a time traveler,
I guess.
Dun dun dun.
Anyway, then
McMahon, once the Shawn Michael man got into the ring, the VidMac wanted to know why Mr. Perfect attacked him last week, and Shawn blew him off. Shawn said that he is a man of his word. He won the Intercontinental title, and he'll defend it against anyone, everyone, and he's been back, and he will always back up his word. Shawn said that he was the best in the World Wrestling Federation. Will defend the title anywhere, anytime, against anyone.
Anybody, yep.
Then somebody in a hood walked around the ring and got in the ring, and a cameraman followed him.
He was in such, like, 1993 garb. He's got, it's like a flannel. So all this is connected, but it's like a flannel vest. T-shirt arms of a different color, and then it's got a hood on too. I definitely had one of those, and it had a picture of the Looney Tunes on the back.
Yeah, then Shawn told that guy to sit down in his seat, and Shawn acted surprised when the man unhooded himself and revealed that it was Marty Jannetty.
You got it.
All I had to say is look at Marty's mullet.
It was good. Well, there were two great mullets in that ring between Marty and Shawn.
Yes. Then, like you said, Marty challenged Michaels for the Intercontinental title later on the night, and Vince McMahon, the play-by-play man, announced the match.
Yep.
I always wondered why Vince McMahon had the stroke back then to make matches.
I don't know. I guess I always accepted just that, like, matches could be made. I don't know. I always thought it was weird once, like, GMs and stuff started becoming a thing. I thought just, like, whatever, you just made a match, and that's what happened.
Fair enough, I guess. Also, yeah, Vince was a voice behind Raw, so I guess it makes, you know, sense. You know, yeah, we tune into Raw every week, and Vince is the voice of Monday Night Raw, so no big deal, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
So I guess, you know, obviously, look, you know, in 2014, I was looking back to 1993, it kind of scratched my head, like, you know, we know Vince is the owner, like, you know, but then, you know, he wasn't well known that Vince was the owner.
Sure, yeah.
That's not on storyline wise, Vince wasn't known as the owner.
Right, I don't think so.
So yeah, that's why it made me kind of scratch my head on why Vince pretty much announced that match is going to happen.
Sure.
When Shawn didn't want to fight him.
Yeah. Well, I think he was just saying that, like, since Shawn said that he would.
Oh, so yeah, makes sense, son.
Do it.
Then we go to a commercial break and we come back and the kid is in the ring waiting for his opponent. Hey, yo.
While Razor was coming out, Macho goes, Marty Jannetty did the thing. So I don't know. He's been saying do the thing. Apparently do the thing means like challenge someone for the Intercontinental title. I don't know.
You don't know? And you don't know why I'm here.
Yep.
And Razor Ramon was walking up the ring steps, and he opened up his vest to the overweight Raw cart gal, yeah, trying to tell her that he and her should hook up, Jack.
Are you sure that's what he was going for?
Well, that's what I assumed.
I don't know. I think you may be reading a little too much into Razor's interactions.
Well, it made me laugh, at least. I really love how you just turned your video camera on, flipped it around to where your iPad was, pointing out, then you turn it off, then you turn your video back on. Nice beard.
Thank you.
Then we might as well go into the Kid versus Razor Ramon. And I did write down that I wrote down the whole match.
I think I almost did too. I like that Kid's, well, I think it's funny that Kid's trunks say L Kid.
Well, because I know he was going as like the Lightning Kid for a while, and the Cannonball Kid.
Yeah, what they call the Hard Luck Kid, they said he went by.
Yeah, so yeah, this week he's just going as the Kid.
Yeah.
So yeah, right away Razor put over his strength over the Kid, you know, pushed him to the ground. Is that a Diet Dr. Pepper?
You got it.
And yeah, Razor, yeah, showed off his strength, pushed the Kid to the ground and all that. And right away, Kid went to the corner, and Razor chopped him and threw him out of the corner.
Right, those are two good chops I wrote down too.
Yeah, showing off his strength, and he's the big man against the little man. Then after that, Razor picked him up and put him in an abdominal stretch, and picked up one of his legs to add the extra torque.
Right.
Which was the thumbnail for this Monday Night Raw.
Yes, it was. I know, I noticed that too when he was doing it. I was like, oh, that's the picture.
Then Razor hit him with a fall-away slam, which was beautiful.
Yeah, it was really well done.
Star-studded fall-away slam.
I couldn't think of the name of that. I just said... I don't know why I couldn't think of it. I wrote, Razor catches the Kid and does a nice overhead throw thing.
What a maneuver.
For me, it was.
Then Razor whipped him to the turnbuckle, tried to chase him. The Kid ducked. Razor went face first into the turnbuckle. The Kid ran to the top rope, hit a moonsault, and got the 3-count upset.
Right, and I was glad that they didn't do, like... a roll-up. I feel like that's just too... When they do, like, fluky finishes or whatever, I think that's done too much. So I like that Kid actually did a move to finish him off, you know? It gives him some credibility there. It's not just, like, he rolled him up or whatever.
Yeah, plus, like, the moonsault, too, you know, him ducking out of Razor, away from Razor, and run up to the top rope and hitting the moonsault. I feel like that was a great way to stun Razor and the fans, and just do a quick, get a quick 1-2-3.
Right. And then sprinted out of the arena.
Which I don't blame him for.
It's true, yeah, I'd probably be scared too.
I rated this match 2 stars.
Oh, 2.5 for me.
Because, you know, granted this was pretty much a squash match, but this is one of the most famous matches from the early Raw history, and especially with the major upset, you know, I can't rate... I had a tough time rating this match any lower than what I did.
Right, me too. I in this really the same boat. I was... you know, I liked it a lot. I know that there really wasn't, like, a lot going on there, so it's not like you can say that... say that, you know, that it was like a perfect match by any mean. It was pretty short, but everything that they did was really good. So I don't know, that's why I went 2.5. I liked everything they did.
I'm happy you switched the camera back to you, Beverly. I had to mail your cat.
Sorry for the distraction.
That was another run in this week. Then we go to another match. The Native American Tatanka against Too Sexy Scott Taylor. Oh, wait, Too Hot.
Too Hot.
Yes, yeah. Too Hot Scott Taylor.
Yeah, not quite yet. But he does, you know, I think maybe he's been quoted as always, like, knowing that he wanted to be, like, that next level type of thing. And you can tell by his gear, he doesn't look like a jobber. He's got, you know, professional-looking tights and... You know, his hair isn't, like, super dumb or whatever. He looks like someone who could belong, you know, if not for being a little small, but still, he looks like he could belong there.
Yeah, because I did write down it was a Battle of the Blue Trunks match.
Right.
A match I always wanted to see. You know, to see who is more blue.
Double D, double die.
Because I did write down that it was Scotty Too Hot, and he looked super young in 1993.
Yeah.
But then again, the Dirty Dog did look pretty young in 1993 himself.
Yeah, but you don't look as old as Scott Taylor does now.
True. I did write down that there were some quick exchanges, and Scotty was thrown down, thrown over the top rope to the outside.
I wrote that down too. That was a huge bump that he took. Tatanka, not only did he throw him outside, he threw him way up in the air, and he landed right on the mat. So that was a giant drop from Scotty there.
Then we did talk about this before. I love your facial expression. I did write down Bobby's toilet paper stats.
Yep.
And how Bobby wrote, I wrote it down word for word, pretty much.
Okay, go for it. This is your time.
3 out of 4 people put their toilet paper on the roll from top down. 30% wrap it when they use it. 30% fold it. And 40% crumple it. Now, Beverly, what do you do?
Oh my God!
don't make an arse out of yourself. Now, answer the question.
No comment for you on the toilet paper in front. No, I don't know, a combination of all of them.
Yes,
I think I've been known to do all three.
Yeah, because when Bobby said that, I had to write all that down. I'm like, trying to think about that for myself too. Like, yeah, I think I'm a little bit of ball. All three.
I think I've been known to do all three.
So whatever. That's pretty much the only note that I took down for this match.
Okay, I got a few more. So like right during that, I'll go blue for a little bit. It was all just a big setup so that Bobby could be like, I guess that makes me a head. So you're supposed to say, "Oh, Bobby's a shithead." So yeah.
Oh, Bobby.
But so during this match, Tatanka is saying like, "This is for Bam Bam Bigelow." I noticed that.
Were they feuding in this time?
I'm not sure, or if they were setting it up, or kind of going from there. I'm not exactly sure. And so then Tatanka hits 3 chops, a couple slaps. Throws Scotty into the ropes, comes back with his Samoan drop for the win.
What's the difference between a chop and a slap?
Side hand versus overhand.
That is why.
And
you're the historian of the podcast.
I'll show you. Chop.
Oh.
Chop.
Oh.
Slap.
Oh. Oh.
Knife edge.
Oh. Yeah, then yeah, I rated this match 3/100 of a star.
Wow.
Only for Bobby stats.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I rated it 1.5 stars.
Then we go to the Mean Gene Kitherin report.
Did you see Mean Gene's tie?
It was ridiculous.
It had a school bus on it with kids in it.
Do you want that tie for school?
No, I think it looks foolish. I don't want any type of tie that looks like that.
Fair enough. Then, yeah, me and Gene wanted to talk about the kid beating Razor Ramon in the Intercontinental title match for later in the night.
Yep. Yeah, this was kind of interesting. Usually the, these King of the Ring reports or whatever, Royal Rumble, whatever was coming up, they're generally, like, it's pretty obvious that they're pre-taped. And to be fair, this one probably was too, but it's cool that Mean Gene is commenting on the things that are happening like that night.
Yes. Then the pay-per-view is on Sunday, the June 13th. And the WWF title match was champion Hulk Hogan versus Yokozuna. And the King of the Ring tournament was being put together still.
Right. Well, they had 6 of the 8 set up, and then they were going to do the last 2 that weekend.
Because I wanted... Well, I guess, yeah, I'll talk about what I was going to bring up later during the Intercontinental title match. Then, did you notice Gene was giving Bobby crap before the King of the Ring report was over.
Yeah. What did he say? Because I wrote what Macho said coming out of it, but what did
Something Gene... along the lines that Sherry has a hots for Bobby, which Bobby admitted.
Yeah, that's right.
Then Gene asked Bobby if Sherry was going to put him in a head scissors.
Yeah. And then Macho goes, how about a sunset flip? Yeah.
Because when I wrote down that Bobby, yeah, well, Bobby was asked, Gene asked Bobby if, I'm sorry, you put your face in the camera, that made me laugh. Gene asked Bobby if Sherry was going to put him in a head scissors. I wrote down ... perverts.
Yeah, you know what they're going for.
Then we go to the next match of Kamala versus Yokozuna.
My man Kamala. And I'm being like totally serious. In the three matches that we've seen Kamala in, he's like totally changed my opinion of him. And I don't know, people can call me an idiot for thinking that Kamala is good or something, but man, like his 1983 work, it's got to be super underrated because I've basically loved everything he's done that we've seen within this like 5 month time period.
Like, so I know, you know, yeah, with this match against Yokozuna and last week's episode that we reviewed it with him facing Michaels, granted it was more comedic than anything.
Yeah.
Still, he is great on lightening up the fans' moods.
Yeah.
And able to, you know, bring, you know, how to give the viewers at home and the fans in the arena a good time during this match.
Well, and every card needs that. You know, it's the, they always say, you know, the wrestling is the circus or whatever, and every circus needs each part, and you need some comedy, like, to make everything work.
So, yeah, so Kamala, same with you that, you know, Kamala, a few episodes that we've done with Kamala in it, that he started to change my opinion about him as well.
Yeah, and this is what I was going to, you were talking about the card gal, you talked about the card gal with Razor Ramon. I liked this one because it looks like Kamala likes the big gal. He goes up the steps as she's coming down. He kind of looks at her, kind of gives her a look. I'm like, oh my gosh, Kamala's going to be in a love angle with the big card gal.
So yeah, I did write down that Kamala came out. We went to a commercial break, came back from a commercial break, went to another commercial, putting over Ico Pro with Tatanka, and yep, another commercial with Slim Jim with the Macho Man.
Right.
Poor Kamala.
And when we come back, it showed that Kamala was very confused by Yokozuna's pre-match rituals.
Yes. Yeah, I wrote down here that Kamala seemed super confused when Yoko was doing a sumo dance ritual thing.
Exactly. Yep, exactly.
And then this match was a lot better than I expected it to be, having two fatties fighting one another.
Yeah, but they're both, I mean, at least Yokozuna's one of the best. I mean, Kamala is better than we thought, so.
Well, especially as a face, he was a lot better than as a heel, because as a heel, he had to be slow and methodical and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, do you write any notes for this
match?
Oh, yeah,
I got a bunch. I wrote a vast amount of notes. So, first I want to say, how stupid are the fans for chanting USA?
Especially what we talked about last week.
Kamala's clearly not from USA. Well, he technically is, but not.
And Yokozuna clearly, supposedly, isn't either.
Yeah, two guys from the USA, but they're both portrayed as not being from the USA. Okay, so I wrote down, they start with a big belly bump.
Now, before we go into more into that.
Oh, okay, sorry.
How Kamala was built from Africa.
Right.
And Yokozuna was built from Japan.
Right.
If you had the option to be built from either Africa or Asia, where do you want to be built from?
I don't know. I feel like I'd probably fit more like, it'd probably be more believable if they said that I was built from Africa.
Yeah, same here.
So I guess I could probably play that better.
I guess, yeah, same here, since, you know, I walked African plains, man.
Yeah.
I can say that I'm from Africa. Yeehaw!
At least you've been there.
Yeah, I was only for 3 weeks.
Anyway. Okay, so anyways, It starts with the belly bump. They start running into each other. It looked good. Yoko was staggered twice, I wrote. And then Kamala does a kick to him, a side kick. And then he does a few of the overhand chops to him. But then Yoko comes back and eventually knocks Kamala down with some two-handed cross chops.
Then Yokozuna won with a bonsai drop.
Right, yep. Fuji interfered, pulled Kamala's foot, which led to a side kick, almost like a super kick from Yokozuna. Three big corner avalanches, and then a bonsai drop.
Yeah, then Yokozuna won with a bonsai. I rated this match 1 star.
Oh my gosh, I wrote this 2 4/5 stars.
I'm happy you're starting to get into the fractions like me, Jack.
You got it, man.
Now we go to a commercial for WWF All-American Wrestling on Sundays at noon with Bobby and Mean Gene.
Right. Yep.
Then we go to the Intercontinental Championship match, the main event of the match, with Shawn Michaels with...
He wasn't there.
He wasn't?
No.
I wrote Diesel.
This is before King of the Ring. He hadn't even debuted yet.
As in Diesel Fuel.
He was not there.
Well, whatever. All I'll say, my Diesel Fuel for the podcast is... Manolo Yolo.
Awesome.
So I had to rock out with the Rockers, you know. Ooh, Dr. Pepper. Die, Dr. Pepper. And how Shawn Michaels without... Yes. Marty Jannetty.
Yes.
And I was going to mention this during the King of the Ring report, but I'll mention this now. And kind of tying with 1993 and with 2014 Beverly. You know, Hulk Hogan was the reigning WWF champion during this Monday Night Raw.
Yes.
And he barely made TV appearances.
Okay, yeah. Granted, this is a good thing. I thought of this too, yeah.
Yeah, granted, WWF only had a lot of one-hour shows, but, you know, compared to, unlike now, and how, I wanted to ask, what's the difference between Hulk Hogan being the WWF champion in 1993, not making many TV appearances, and Brock Lesnar being the WWE World Heavyweight Champion 2014 and not making that many TV appearances?
So the big difference that I see, and now I wasn't like a 100% viewer in 1993, but I tried to. The big difference is that Hulk Hogan is like non-existent on TV. You know, Brock Lesnar. The biggest difference is Paul Heyman. You know, Hulk Hogan wasn't on. He wasn't doing videotape appearances, and he also didn't have anybody to speak for him those appearances for him.
Wasn't Jimmy Hart his manager at that time?
He was, but he wasn't coming on TV.
Fair enough.
You know, like, they could have used him in the same way that they're using Paul Heyman, but I just think this is working so much better than what they did with Hogan. It was clear that he was on the outs, you know?
Yeah, because I know, obviously back in the 80s and all that, they had superstars and such, and obviously that was pretty much all squash heavy anyway.
Right.
And, yeah, just, you know, what I thought about that during the King of the Ring report, and, you know, I think just about every Raw episode that we watched, we saw the Intercontinental Champion either defend the title or make some kind of appearance on Monday Night Raw, and very, very rarely you saw the WWF Champion.
Now, I mean, if memory serves, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Hulk Hogan was on TV between WrestleMania and King of the Ring.
Yeah, because, well, I guess I haven't watched that many Raws from between WrestleMania 9 and King of the Ring. Mm-hmm. But I know I do remember Hogan being on the first few Raws, building up his return, and him building up him and Beefcake against Money Incorporated at WrestleMania 9.
Right, he was on before WrestleMania. I don't know if he was on after.
But yeah, then we might as well. Yeah, I kind of wanted to ask you about that and, you know.
Right, it's a good question. I think they're doing a lot better this time, and I think they can extend Lesnar's reign a lot better than they did with Hogan. I just think Heyman adds a lot to it. I think Lesnar knows that he has to at least do these like videotape packages and stuff. And I think they're just a lot better, you know, better equipped to handle that too.
How would you have redone Hogan's WWF title run in 93 then?
Well, I mean, if he's going to do where he's not going to be there, I don't know. Like, I wish Fair I could. Using total hindsight, I wish I could just say he shouldn't have even been on TV. Because what's the point? Or he shouldn't have even won it. Like, what's the point? If he's not going to be on it, then he's going to lose it his first time back. Why does he even win it? All they did was damage Yoko at WrestleMania by having him lose so quickly.
Then should Hulk Hogan hold the title to SummerSlam and lose it to Bret Hart?
No, because I really just think, like, in watching these 93 Raws, like, Yokozuna was the best thing going. You know, he's the best character they got. Maybe outside of Kamala.
Yeah. Well, I guess as a main event status star to hold the title, yeah, Yoko is probably the best guy.
Yeah, he's, and I think, like, you know, there's an argument to be made that Hart beating Hogan is a big thing, but I don't know. You know, just like if he loses it, then he leaves like he did. I don't know. I think Hart's gotta beat Yokozuna for it.
Makes sense. I guess we must go back to 1993. I guess we were stayed in 93. We must go into the main event match with Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty.
Right.
I wrote down that Shine gained the early advantage, but that didn't last too long.
Yeah, I thought it was really back and forth, and it was super fast-paced early.
Yeah, super fast-paced. And the match was brought to the outside when Shine went outside.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember how Shine went outside, but I probably escaped Marty somehow. Then Marty hit a beautiful baseball slide and jumped over the top rope. Hit Michaels with a cross body block.
Yeah, I wrote Marty's on fire. Baseball slide, then he skinned the cat, and then he went off the ropes and did a plancha. Yeah, that was a great sequence by Marty Jannetty.
Then, do you have any notes between that spot and the other time when Shawn went out to the outside?
Yes, I do. I won. Oh, just a nice head scissor from Marty. He did that too. And then I wrote, that's just kind of interesting. It's just kind of an interesting dynamic of Marty being in control for like the first 5 to 6 minutes. You know, not always can a match develop well when the good guy's in control that much or that large of a percentage. But I think Michaels does a good job of just kind of running around and, you know, being afraid of Marty. And it comes across well. It's kind of an interesting structure.
Yeah, because I know, talk about, you know, Shawn being afraid of Marty. That another time that Shawn went rolled outside to the outside, Shawn went and grabbed his belt and tried to leave, but Mr. Perfect came out with his collar popped up and made him go back to the ring.
Yes.
I wanted to ask.
Stood at the entrance.
I wanted to ask you, why was Mr. Perfect's collar popped for his appearance?
To show his power.
Was Mr. Perfect the perfect pimp?
Is that what his character really is? He's the original Godfather.
I don't know. I just, you know, I was thinking, you know, with his collar popped, you know, I'm trying to think of something funny to say, and that's the first thing I thought of, Mr. Perfect as the perfect pimp.
Yeah, the big-time perfect pimp. And it was, like, open. It was, like, a white sweater, and it was just a ridiculous just look in general.
Then Mr. Perfect came out right before the commercial break, and we came back, and, yeah, the action was back in the ring, and Marty had the advantage until Shawn hit the stun gun on Marty. Which was, you know, Shawn pretty much picked up Marty and, you know, kind of dropped him on the top rope, having the top rope approach clothesline Marty Jannetty.
Yeah, and he did a few moves based around the ropes. He kind of took it to the ropes. He did that, and then he draped in between the right over the middle rope. And what do you know what that move's called where you run and you jump with your leg onto their back? Big Boss Man did that a lot.
I think like the running knee strike or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't know, but that look he did that, and what else did he choked him with the rope as well. So
okay, then yeah, it was pretty back and forth match. Then after a couple of roll ups, Sean hit Marty with the sweet chin music.
Right.
They went and taunted Mr. Perfect, and Perfect threw his perfect towel at Sean, causing the perfect distraction, letting Marty hit the schoolboy for the victory.
Yeah.
Then yeah.
And right before that, I wanted to say, like, Marty hit a really, really, really nice power slam on Michaels for a two count.
So, yeah, before we go into the rating of the match, what is your thoughts on... I know we talked about the Marty and Sean feud before on a previous podcast, but what is your thoughts on their match from this episode of Raw and other matches that you saw that those two had together?
Well, all the matches that I've seen that these two have had together have been tremendous. They work great together. They're both very good in the ring. And yeah, that's, I guess my thoughts is whenever they're together, they always have good matches.
Okay. I rated this match 3 stars.
Okay. I went a little higher. I went 3.75.
Because I feel like this match was a classic match between the two, and I absolutely love this match.
Yeah, right. I was looking back through my notes, and I saw that I ranked that Ric Flair Mr. Perfect match 4 stars. I think this one is just right below that, so that's why I went 3.75.
Yeah, because, yeah. Can't remember what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. I remember emailing you earlier this week about this match and how this match had me hooked enough that I had a tough time taking my eyes away from the screen to take notes about this match.
Yeah, it was darn good. Yeah, for sure.
Then, the show closes, seeing Mr. Perfect's towel in the ring, and announcers put over the Raw the following week. So, yeah, that was this week's edition of Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, and you mentioned before that it was on that top 20 disc of the top 20 Raws. I can definitely see why. It had at least two, well, really 3 really good matches. The quite good promo from Sean that set up the Marty deal at the end. You know, and it has Bobby talking about toilet paper.
What's wrong with Bobby's toilet paper talk?
Nothing adds to it.
Then we might as well go into the jobber of the week. My jobber had to be the team of Tony Vajra and Glenn Ruth.
Okay, my jobber is just Tony Vajra.
Fair.
I thought Glenn Ruth carried that match. He was the best performer in the ring, and that counts Billy and Bart.
Well, fine. He gets
out of the ring about 30 seconds in.
Okay, I'll scratch off Glenn Ruth, and I'll agree with you on Tony Vajra.
Okay, 100% agree with Tony Vajra.
Just because Glenn Ruth would become something of himself later on.
Yes, right.
My main event status star for this podcast has to be Sean. Once again, the Heartbreak Kid, the Intercontinental Champion, the guy who defends the Intercontinental title anywhere, anytime, against anybody, Shawn Michaels.
I was really, really close to giving Shawn Michaels the nod as that. I went with Marty Jannetty, though.
Isn't that
for
funny?
Much of the same reason, I thought he really came out with fire. I thought he did a great job working that match. So
I find that funny because I think, besides this being, I think, the second episode, I said Shawn Michaels was the main event status star. I think this is also now the second podcast you have as Marty Jannetty as your main event status star.
I'm a big Marty Jannetty fan, what can I say?
Oh, Sean! Then we might as well go into the top five list, and I picked it out for this week, and just like we talked about before, that I've noticed that every episode of Raw that we watched so far between 93 and 95, that the Intercontinental Champion made an appearance on every episode, so even if it's an interview or run-in, a match or whatever, compared to the WWF Champion who was pretty much non-existent. So I wanted to do a top five Intercontinental Champions list.
Yep, I like this one. It was fun picking out.
I guess I can start out with my number five. It's a two-way tie with Triple H and The Rock.
Interesting. I'll tell you why in a second. Yeah, that's a cool way to go. Okay, for it.
Triple H and The Rock are my number five because the Intercontinental title value or bumped up both stars into main event status stars and helped their feud. And I believe that, those two facing each other and, holding the title and facing each other between 97 and 98 made the title mean something in 98. And I feel like the Intercontinental title helped their feud out a lot, especially at SummerSlam 1998 for their ladder match.
Yeah, and that's a great match. We talked about it at the SummerSlam podcast, but right.
So, yeah, because I was thinking, I guess for this list, I kind of thought of, when I think about best Intercontinental champions, who are the top five champions?
Mm-hmm.
And, I'll talk about my number one when we get to it, but I was thinking, try to think of, pretty much time periods for Intercontinental champions, and, for the late 90s, early 2000s, I thought of The Rock and Triple H at the same time. That's why I had to give them the two-way tie for my number five.
Right. That's a good choice.
Who's your number five?
Okay, my number five, I'm sure it's a guy who's going to be later in your countdown, but my number five is, through my count, maybe the person who's held it the most times? 9-time champion Chris Jericho?
Good choice.
Okay. Yep. And I thought even though as when you look at the list, the reigns get shorter and shorter and shorter, he is one that when you think about the 2000s, from when he debuted in 1999 up until, all the way into 2011, 2012, when you think about Intercontinental Champions, it's him, or he's one of them. And he had lots of great matches with a variety of opponents, having some great matches with China, with Jeff Jarrett, just doing a good job that way and really kind of carrying a lot of those Attitude Era cards that were kind of crappy at the top. So
I enjoy your number five pick. My number four has to be one could say he is a perfect Intercontinental champion, Mr. Perfect.
Great. That was one that just narrowly missed the cut for me.
Yeah, because, kind of like with Triple H and The Rock, Mr. Perfect brought up the Intercontinental title when he held the title. And I wanted to pick Mr. Perfect because guys like him and Bret Hart in the early, late 80s, early 90s, showed that Intercontinental title was a workers' title.
Mm.
And I feel like Perfect was probably the perfect choice to be on my list for that. And yeah, because when I think of the early 90s, 89, 90, 91, 92, I think for Intercontinental title mid-card status, I think about Mr. Perfect. Because right. He can have a great match with just about anybody. And yeah. I feel like he helped carry the Intercontinental division during that time.
Good choice.
Who's your number four?
All right, my number four, one that you mentioned, and I had a tough time choosing between your two number fives for this slot. I went with The Rock for number four. I just thought, for me, this one, I kind of tried to pick one that for each of the five, kind of that exemplifies a different role of the the Intercontinental Champion. For me, for number four for The Rock, it really shows kind of the transition of a person from mid-card to, you know, heavyweight championship status. And I think Rock's, you know, feud with Triple H really put him there and really kind of catapulted him up the ranks.
I like your choice, and I like your description.
Thank you.
My number three likes to take surveys.
Okay,
and cool. The survey says one more for the bad guy.
Nice.
My number three is Razor Ramon.
Nice.
Because, you know, because of his feuds with, you know, Shawn Michaels, Diesel, and Jeff Jarrett, when he was Intercontinental Champion, I feel like, yeah, he had to be on my list. And I feel like that, from mid-90s, like 94, 5, 96, I think of Razor as Intercontinental Champion. Because okay. I think I mentioned before on the podcast, I used to rent WrestleMania 10 a lot on VHS from my local video store during those years. And I was pissed off every time I watched a ladder match between him and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 10. And I got pissed off every time when the finish came, when Shawn got pushed off the ladder, got his foot tied up between the top and middle rope, and Razor climbed up the ladder and won the titles.
And Razor?
Yeah, Razor.
Yeah, you didn't like him?
I was a big Shawn Michaels fan back then. It pissed me off that each time I watched the tape and Razor won, I expected somehow Shawn to win the title every time I rewatched the tape.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, because I just think of, you know, Razor as Intercontinental Champion during, you know, the mid-90s, and I think he was the first guy to win the Intercontinental title, I think either four or five times.
Okay.
So yeah, that's why I had to pick Razor as my number three.
Nice. Okay, my number three is Bret Hart. That kind of the, as you mentioned, you know, taking the Intercontinental Championship and turning it kind of into the workers' title, the one who where you'd expect long matches, where you'd expect a lot of you know, high kind of technical ability. For me, that's all about Bret Hart. And I thought, again, you know, he served that role really well, and it pushed him toward being in the main event.
Okay, my number two has to be Shawn. And, you know, Shawn Michaels, because kind of like with, I guess, my early choice is that, you know, Shawn Michaels, when I think of Shawn Michaels in the, you know, early part of his career, I think of Intercontinental Champion in the early to mid-90s.
Nice.
And, yeah, you know, he had great matches, you know, with Perfect a little bit, you know, a few matches, you know, with Diesel, with Razor Ramon and all that. And I feel like we're getting, you know, I think Shawn gave up the Intercontinental title at least once. But I just feel like that you know, the few rides that we review with Shawn wrestling, that he helped carry that card in the match that he performed in. And I feel like that he showed why the Intercontinental title was a worker's title.
Right. Okay, Shawn Michaels is also my number two. And as we're seeing with these early Raws, he's almost, you know, the face of the company. He's like he is the champion right now, who's on TV, and he's the one who's defending his title. And you can almost see, you know, that interview that you were quoting before. Now I kind of realize maybe that was a dig at Hogan. He defends that title anywhere, anytime, against anybody, whereas Hogan's not defending it about any, you know, against anybody.
And Holly X, I thought I heard that they originally wanted him to hold it through SummerSlam and drop it to Bret Hart at SummerSlam.
Sure.
And yeah, it's like that Hogan didn't want to.
Right. So, you know, he's not only is he carrying the title, but he's really almost carrying the company right now. So I think he's doing an awesome job, and that's why he's my number two.
My number one is Break Down the Walls of Jericho.
It's like Billy Gunn.
I know. My number one is Chris Jericho. Like, look at that dog. Dirty dog. Yeah, my number one has to be Chris Jericho because, kind of like what you mentioned for your number five when you listed him as your number five, that Jericho is the most reigning Intercontinental Champion with 9 title runs. You know, his feud with China. I remember him in China and Hardcore Holly had a 3-way dance at Royal Rumble 2000. And then, like, WrestleMania 2000 when they had him, Angle, and Benoit in a 2 or 3 or 2 falls match, the European and Intercontinental title. Then
that was a really good match. I remember that.
Jericho's feud with Rey Mysterio, I think 2008, 2009 for the Intercontinental title. I just feel like you said, Jericho brings out the best out of his, well, any challenger that he had. I feel like, you know, like, especially during his last few times he held the Intercontinental title, he helped give the Intercontinental title more meaning, like it once did in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Jericho is my number one pick.
Mm-hmm, that's a good selection. So my number one really, really goes against the grain of what we've been saying. You know, we've been saying all these folks who were really good workers in the ring.
Don't say you picked Slapnuts for your number one.
No. So they're all great workers. Well, this guy definitely not a great worker. The other thing we said is that they use the Intercontinental title to really catapult their way up the card. This guy did not do that either. He stayed as a mid-carder for the rest of his career. However, when I think Intercontinental champion, I think this guy, and he will never let you think any different, Honky Tonk Man.
That, good choice.
You know, still the longest reigning, and just like I said, I was thinking, who do I think of when I think Intercontinental Champion? It's got to be him.
I got long side burns in my hair, slick back. I got come to your town in a pink Cadillac. I'm just a Honky Tonk Man.
He's a Honky Tonk Man.
I'm just a Honky Tonk Man.
He's a Honky Tonk Man.
I'm the Honky Tonk Man. I'm cool. I'm cocking. I'm bad.
Yeah, so just got to go with him, whether you like him or not. He's my greatest Intercontinental Champion.
At first, I thought you were going to say Carlito Caribbean Cool.
No.
So I'm happy you picked HTM.
Right. You got it, man.
I am surprised I never thought of the Honky Tonky Man.
It's okay.
But, so yeah, so I guess we might as well go into, do you have any closing comments for the podcast this week?
I do not.
Okay, I guess we might as well go into the plugs for this week. We obviously, you know, follow or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MainEventStatusRadio. You know, for me on Twitter, it's DirtyDogMES. That's dog as in DAWG. Dirty Dog MES. Beverly, how can people follow you on Twitter?
At Beverly Hills MES.
Then I'll see. We are on iTunes, people. I don't know how many of you guys listen to us through our podcast. Yeah, search us out on iTunes, Main Event Status Radio. Subscribe us there. That way, whenever the show is posted, edited, and all that uploaded, it will be streamed right to your computer and to your MP3 player. And also on our website, maineventstatus.com. That is maineventstatus.com. So I guess that's episode 6 in the books. Raw from 1993. May 17th, 1993, episode number 17. So I guess that's it. For Beverly Hills, this is the Dirty Dog. And I'll talk to you guys after the matches.
You're having fun, aren't you? Well, I have a message.